And that's the reason why I actually started Vessels of Hope, because I didn't want anybody to feel like they were alone and they were by themselves. And I wanted them to be connected to people that get it. Because a lot of times we are in this space and we feel isolated. We don't want to be vulnerable and people who may look down on us, that may be looking at us like we're not intelligent and all those type things. So I created Vessels of Hope for that purpose, for having a safe space and connecting others with resources when needed.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerek Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from.
Hey, everybody. This is LaDerek Horn, and I'm here with
Winifred A. Winston.
And we are very excited to welcome you back to another episode of the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. This episode features Dr. Tracy Johnson Rockmore. Dr. Johnson Rockmore had a conversation just with Winifred. You guys were able to connect. How did you guys meet up, Winifred?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I had to focus to say doctor, because I was going to say Tracy. I'm going to just say Tracy.
She gave you permission to say Tracy.
Yes, so yes, right. Yes. So we met, actually, she came here to Baltimore. She's from Philly. She came here to Baltimore. She was on a panel at my daughter's previous school, and she was telling her lived experience, and her mom was there with her. And I was just so taken with her story, because at the time, she was still using her tutor, and her tutor was like in the 70s or 80s, like years old. And she was talking about being a professor and spelling things wrong, or, you know, going over material that she produced, she put together. And she says she's looking at the students, and she could tell by the way they're nodding their heads and everything that she's not reading whatever is on the screen. So she had to play it off, you know? And I thought, oh my gosh, like this is so inspiring, right? Because she definitely has a story. And so I just like, wait a minute, we got to have her on the podcast. It's a no-brainer. And so I reached out and we had a conversation.
And I think we actually made reference to this interview as part of our live recording of the podcast for the NJEA conference. I really enjoyed hearing the conversation, particularly to hear how far she came, right? From the challenges she had early on in school, and basically no one telling her that she had any sort of potential to go to college, and the way she really had to access resources, get the help she needed, and is now a professor. And y'all were vibing on the higher ed kind of level and that experience. She also has a really great group where she's providing a lot of supports to folks who are living this experience like all of us. Enjoy the episode. Please make sure you take a look at the show notes, and here we go.
Today, we have Dr. Tracy Johnson Rockmore. I'm so excited to have her. Tracy is the founding president and CEO of Vessels of Hope, a nonprofit organization that helps individuals with learning disabilities. I first met Dr. Johnson Rockmore here in the Baltimore area. She was on a panel and she was talking about her lived experience. And I don't know if you remember this, but I even got an opportunity to meet your mom. So we are so excited to have you. Welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here and to just be able to finally reconnect with you, to touch bases, and for us to have this conversation. This is absolutely wonderful. I'm so glad for the invitation, and I'm so honored to be here.
Yes, we are excited to have you. You were one of the top five. You know, this space is very small, and you were one of the top five. Like, do you know Tracy? Do you know Dr. Johnson Rockmore out of Philly? I'm like, yes. Right? You know, I'm like, yes, I met her, because folks want to introduce me to other folks in the space who are doing similar work, right? And of course, people of color. So I'm like, oh, yes, I already have her on the list. I'm like, I already have her on the list. So Tracy, is it okay if I call you Tracy?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So tell me about your experience growing up in Philly as a young Black girl with dyslexia.
That experience was extremely challenging, because sharing my story, and you know, but I'll share with the audience, I was not identified as being dyslexic until I was out of high school. So my struggles in public school, not only being African-American with the learning disability, but also dealing with the poverty issue. My mother was a single mother and I was the youngest of three. Again, my mother just trusts the school system, thinking that they were doing the best for me as they gave, you know, the testing and not really identifying me with dyslexia, just saying I was slow or I was low in reading, writing, and all these different areas. Just my scores were very low, but not really identifying me as being dyslexic. So that was the issue. Not knowing what was going on, just thinking, my mother thinking basically if I was putting these special classes or these small classes that I was getting the help that I needed. But all the time my self-esteem suffered, low self-esteem, bouts of suicide, depression. My internal self started to spiral when I was a child because of undiagnosed learning difference. So that was the issue, was not diagnosis being dyslexic, because actually when I got out of high school, that's when my own journey began. And even in high school, we had a special ed teacher told us we could never go to college. We did not have the skills. He himself was an African-American and said to the whole class that college, just don't even shoot for it. It's not for you guys. It's just not something that you should aspire to do. But that I always knew that I was bright, but I just didn't know how to access the intelligence that I had. So again, fast forward out of high school, dead end jobs here and there, not really trying to, not knowing my space in life. I started just started working in these dead end jobs, not aspiring to a career or anything like that. But I saw an old episode of a TV show that talked about dyslexia, and that's when the light went on for me. I'm like, wait a minute, I think
it
that's
was
me.
That Cosby episode?
Yes, it was. It was. So basically, that's when my journey began, and I actually connected with our local PBIDA, which is the International Dyslexia Association. And that's when I connected with someone, that's when I was able to get identified as being dyslexic. But for me, that was help. That opened up the world for me. Because
wow.
So
that episode, you saw yourself and then you sought out IDA.
I did.
You weren't even in college yet.
No.
That's amazing. Okay.
I was not in college yet.
Okay, that's amazing. So that one episode, now several people have said, that's why I called the episode out. Several mm-hmm. people have said that episode, you know, made them think, second guess some things, or it brought dyslexia, that word even, that's the only time they heard that word. So it kind mm-hmm. of brought dyslexia to the forefront. But that's powerful that episode made you seek out help.
It did. I started to quickly identify when the psychologist gave the diagnosis. In that particular episode, I was like, that's me. And I started to do my own search to find out how could I get help. And I connected with our local IDA, International Dyslexia Association, which I am now a board member of that same association. And again, it empowered me to want to empower others. So I had to, of course, get remediation before I went back to college. I went through the Wilson program, which Barbara became, she's a great advocate for me as well and other people with dyslexia. But I had to get some type of remediation before attempting to go to college. I actually tried, when I got out of high school, I actually tried to go to our local college here in PA, and I failed their entry exam. Who cannot get in community college? I couldn't. In fact, they put me in adult education classes, and I just graduated from high school that year before. So I'm like, this wasn't for me. So that whole challenge, and even in that challenge, this was before I was identified as being dyslexic. I had a counselor at the local college told me, how did you even get this far?
Oh, wow.
He said, how'd you get here? How'd you get this one? And that was another blow to my self-esteem. So that brought me spiraling again. But again, it wasn't until I was actually identified as being dyslexic where I felt like, now I know I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. I was always right about my intuition inside. I am smart. I just didn't know how to access. I didn't have the right tools to access my intelligence at the time.
How did you get connected with Barbara? And for you guys listening, Barbara is one of the co-founders. Her husband founded the Wilson Reading System. I hope I'm saying that name correctly.
Wilson Reading Program. Yep, Wilson Reading
Program. So how did you get connected with them?
Actually, Barbara probably connected with me. She came to Philadelphia one time, and actually I was just working with my Wilson tutor, who is like a mother to me now. She's in her 80s, but she's like a mother to me now. I was working with her, and I don't know how Barbara found out that I was, you know, how my journey to Wilson began, but she connected with me, and she's been connected with me ever since. And, you know, oh, wow. She's an awesome advocate. Like I say, she's become a great friend to me, a great mentor for me. And actually, I'm trying to finish up my Wilson certification as well, because again, I know I need more tools to empower those who are struggling.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. So you said your tutor, I do remember you saying your tutor, you still had the same tutor and she was up in age. So
yeah,
she's been with you for a minute now.
Yes. And I mean, actually, I just released a book not too long ago, you know about it, The Journey of Hope, Everyday Guide for Adults with Dyslexia. She and I wrote the book together.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So the connection between student and tutor or interventionist, right? How great is that? How important is that? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh.
I mean, that bond or that connection, because that point, that individual is really helping empower the child or the individual in giving us the tools that we never gained in the beginning when we were supposed to. So it's really nourishing us and bringing our potential to the point where we can excel. And that's why that connection and that bond is so tight, because in that space is where we're receiving most success in the area that we struggle the most as well.
Yes, you're so right. You're so right. My daughter, we've had the same tutor for her since the pandemic. I was afraid to let her go because I'm like, okay, you know, tutors, they fill up fast, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of go along with the school schedule. And I was like, if we let her go, we probably won't be able to get her again. And with the pandemic, I didn't know if, you know, if she would have a spot for us again. So I didn't stop. And I remember one day she came home, my daughter came home, and she was just a little moody and she had tutoring that day. And I was like, oh, I'm not worried about it. She's going to go on. She's going to get online with Christina, and either she's going to be happy when she get off, and then Christina's going to text me and I'll know what happened. Like literally without even thinking, that's just what I was like, oh, I'm not worried about it. And now that you say that, like that bond is forging, because she's been with her for a couple of years now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's already hard for us to share that difficulty with others anyway. So when you're feeling though that you're now in a safe place to share your most challenging part of yourself, that helps. That helps.
And you know what? And Christina, her tutor, is dyslexic as well, but I think she found out later, but she will push her.
Yeah,
she'll receive it from Christina, right? Mm-hmm. She will receive it from Christina because I don't know if I shared this previously, but I was listening to Dr. Sally Shaywitz.
Shaywitz.
And Logan walked by and she says, what is she talking about? Does she have dyslexia? I'm like, that's the, I don't know. She know how we feel. How does she know? So, and when the pandemic started and we were doing the virtual and I'm trying to help her, she told me, you're not certified, mommy. You're not qualified to teach me. I said, okay.
Oh my, oh my.
Yeah, she was getting frustrated with me. I was getting frustrated. Like, I can't do this. But, you know, but her tutor and a lot of her teachers at her school are neurodivergent as well. So she sees, you know, being great. She's looking up to them. And so she receives it when her tutor is hard on her, when her teachers are hard on her, because she's like, okay, they get it.
They get it.
They get it. Mm-hmm. But with me, no patience. She's like, you don't understand.
And that's the reason why I actually started Vessels of Hope, because I didn't want anybody to feel like they were alone and they were by themselves. And I wanted them to be connected to people that get it. Because a lot of times we are in this space and we feel isolated. We don't want to be vulnerable, and people who may look down on us, maybe looking at us like we're not intelligent, you know, and all those type things. So I created Vessels of Hope for that purpose, for having a safe space and connecting others with resources when needed. Because that isolation, it could be spiraling again with our self-esteem and our emotions and our self-worth. So
what exactly do you do with Vessels of Hope? I know it's a nonprofit. So what services and programs do you guys have?
Mainly, it's just really getting in the community. Prior to the pandemic, I was out more in the community, getting information to our underserved community. So having either workshops, I was in the HBO documentary. So oftentimes I would take that documentary, pack it up in my little bag and go show it somewhere. And we would have Q&A sessions. It would often bring out a lot of emotions, but not only that, connecting people, parents, as well as children who would actually watch it, they felt like, oh my gosh, there's others out there like me. And then we would just have open and candid Q&As. So also connecting them with some resources that of course that I was able to find, like PBIDA. It's another friend of mine. She does a reading clinic for dyslexic students. I would connect them with her resources. She also does the diagnostic testing. So that type of thing. I would really connect, bridge the gap between the least of these and those who need the resources. I would connect those communities.
Yeah, that's so needed. And folks don't understand why. And it's especially needed in the Black and Brown community, period.
Absolutely.
Regardless of socioeconomic status, because we're just not in that space.
Yes.
Right? We're just not in that space. You know, just one, pointing somebody in the right direction of the right tutor, pointing yes. someone in the right direction of a special education advocate. Right?
Absolutely.
To be there at that initial IEP meeting to help prepare mm-hmm. that parent is so, so very crucial.
Yes.
And it, like you said, it's a hole. It's a gaping hole in public education, period. Mm-hmm. As far as parents feeling empowered and actually understanding how to advocate. And now when you add this learning disability that they themselves may have, may not yes. understand, may not want to receive it.
Absolutely.
But then they see your documentary, they see your story mm-hmm. and, you know, they're like, wait a minute. And so they're inspired. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about higher education, because I know a little bit of that story because, you know, I'm on a panel, but now you're an adjunct professor in higher yes. ed. So yes. so to all those teachers and folks in K-12 and that community college, there you have it. Now you're teaching at the college, right? <We're at. laughs>
Yes. And I love, you know what, dealing with my learning challenge, I would never thought that I ever would be, number one, of course, a teacher, and secondly, teaching in higher ed, but I absolutely love it, because the constituents that actually teach, most of our, we have satellite campuses at the one college that I'm affiliated with, and most of my students are single mothers, low income. They're either coming back to school, maybe this is their first time in school. And oftentimes I would show them a piece of whatever video that I was a part of sharing my learning difference. And oftentimes there's a student in there struggling with the same thing. And they're now returning back to school. And I always show them, you're not looking at a perfect teacher. I'm going to show you some of my scars, but I'm going to show you what you can do. You work hard enough. Not only that, you have that determination that you're going to do better, not just for you, but for your entire family. So I love that space. I love teaching. I would do it honestly if they didn't pay me. That's how much I really love higher education, especially dealing in our community, going in our community, really bringing the education to them and lifting them up from where they are. Because I'm sure they've been told a lot of things that they couldn't do it, they couldn't make it, you know, why they're even tempted to go to college, all those types of things. And I believe that's what God fashioned me for, that piece, to bridge that gap with them.
Yeah, I taught in higher ed. That's the only reason I earned my master's degree, because I wanted to adjunct teach. My favorite professor in college, both actually undergrad and graduate, were adjuncts. They worked mm-hmm. in what I call worked in the real world, and then they brought
exactly.
that experience to the world.
Exactly.
That was the only reason. I mean, I didn't go to my graduation. I just wanted degree conferred, because then you right. have your official transcripts. And, you know, I didn't know about dyslexia when I was teaching, but I taught a very similar population, right? Mm-hmm. Very similar population. And when I would read some of the written assignments, and I'm like, this is not matching that person, because when she told me about it, it didn't come out this way. And so as I learned that you know, about dyslexia. My daughter's identified. I'm learning everything, all my experiences, having worked as an administrator in higher ed, but then mm-hmm. going into the classroom, because I felt like, oh, they're not coming to student affairs. Let me go to them. And I really wanted to be in the classroom. So it started like connecting all the dots for me. And I'm like, wait a minute, all these adults struggling. Oh, wow. You know, mm-hmm. because conversation, presentations, because I love to give presentations. You don't have to grade those. You grade those in class. I don't have to take
right. That's so, paperwork for you, right?
So I'm like, oh my gosh, she presented so well.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Well, and oh, do I give this more weight? Because this on paper is not adding up. But then it was like, oh wow, like really is a thing, because I had students in high school when I was a high school teacher, even after the fact, I'm like, that young lady was struggling. That lady had probably had dyslexia, and it made sense. And I'm thinking, I was their teacher and I didn't know.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to tell parents, that, you know, some of the best teachers and the nicest, because everybody get caught up with nice.
Exactly.
Like they nice, but they don't know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Right? They nice and they have the best intentions, but they don't
they're
know.
Not equipped.
Yeah,
they
don't exactly. Know. Like my daughter said, mommy, you're not certified. You're not qualified. Oh my gosh. Yes. So I know that you have some other things on the table right now. Tell us what's going on and what's next. Because like I said, you are, and when I mean guys, when I say she's the top five, she's in the top five. She's being very humble, but she's in the top five. She is connected to some amazing people. She does amazing work. She's touched so many lives, right? And you know, we're talking about Barbara Wilson, like that's her good friend. And when you guys look up the Wilson Reading Program, you'll know that this is used in a lot of public elementary schools across the country. They use foundations for kindergarten, first grade. Well, they should use it for K-1-2-3, just my opinion, and then catch those kiddos who need more intervention, you know, more interventions and go up a different level. But, you know, that's being used across the country and in a lot of public schools. Now, we do know that they're not using it with fidelity, but, you know, she's got connections, you guys. She's got connections in this space. So what's next? And what's next now that we're coming out of the pandemic? What are you going to be involved in, you know, now that you can get back out in the community?
Like I said, my hard pressed thing is really trying to finish up the Wilson certification program, because we always have to continue to grow and continue to learn so we can share with those that need it. So my goal is to at least can finish my level one certification, which I am, I'm sure you know, I got married last year. So I actually have a 10-year-old. She has dyslexia and ADHD as well. So she's now receiving Wilson tutoring. And I've been trying to struggle to get my own my own stuff down to help her even more, but help her and other kids like her and adults like her. So I'm like, I need to step back probably from running around and really get my training done, my Wilson certification, so that way I can have more tools to go out and empower more people. So that's number one. Number two, once I finish that piece, I do want to write a second book. So I'm working on kind of the sketching of what that's going to look like and who that population is going to serve. You know, some people saying I need a part two to the adult section. So that might be coming up, because my goal in doing the book first for adults is because we talk about our kids all the time. We're supposed to talk about our kids, but after high school, you're still dyslexic.
Yep.
You know, like you shared, the adults that you encountered in those classrooms, the adults that I encountered in the classroom, they're still struggling and they were probably not identified. So the book that was published is just really a guide to help them to navigate this crazy world where it's like, it's not adult friendly, it's not dyslexic friendly all the time for adults. So maybe writing some things that I missed out on that in the book, in that section of part one. So maybe looking into doing more in that.
Oh, that is awesome. And, you know, I just was thinking about when you were just saying helping your daughter and then you finishing up that certification. And with all the experience and all the training you have, that is something that still comes up, because a lot of, you know, I just came from a meeting and they were talking about parents advocating and parents doing more and, oh, we need your parents. And I said, folks who are not in this space don't understand parents are in crisis.
Yes.
So parents find out that their children are dyslexic, they are in crisis, and they don't have the capacity. I get a lot of parents that tell me, oh, Winifred, thank you. Once I get mine underway, once I get mine settled, I want to be able to help more parents, mm-hmm. right? But at that moment, they do not have the capacity, right? And when you do delve in, it is a lot, It is a lot. I took, I'm not going to take a tutor. Like I couldn't take Wilson or anything. I don't know if I can't even pronounce certain words, right? So that would be just too hard for me. I leave that to experts and people who can make it sound good and explain it, right? But we do similar work connecting parents. So I want to connect them to advocates and educators, but I also want to know and be knowledgeable. So I took some training. I took SEAP 1.0 with the Council of Parent Advocates and Attorneys, right?
Okay.
But I was still advocating for my daughter, but I was taking that class. I'm still working and it's different. When we're taking these things now as adults, trying to help our children, knowing all that we know, it's almost like information overload. So when you take them, you are really taking them. You're not just, oh, I just want to get a good grade and go. I literally would start the class at work, driving from work. And I knew with traffic and the way things would go, by the time I got to a certain point for Q&A, I pull over and park. So I could be, present for the Q&A so I could ask questions. And then I would finish my commute home. That's dedication, but
yeah, it is dedication. Absolutely.
When we're in this space and we know that we want to be knowledgeable in order to help another parent.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because I don't want to ever refer someone to an advocate who doesn't know what they're talking about.
That's right.
I met an advocate like that when I was in the space and I left it feeling like I don't know anything. And I was telling them information like I'm not going to pay this person. You know, because I'm like, And with some parents who don't know, there's people out there who want to monetize this and take advantage. That part, here you are with all the connections, all the information, and it's still a balancing act. Yeah, and people need to understand that it's not that parents don't want to get involved. It is a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And I recently had a parent talking to me about the strain on her marriage.
Yeah.
And, we get some parents, one parent will embrace it and say, okay, let's roll up our sleeves. And then the other parent is like, no, there's nothing wrong.
Yep.
Now the running joke is that parent that's saying nothing wrong, they're neurodivergent.
That's the one, right? Exactly. Exactly. But you see how powerful that, that stigma, that denial, all those things are when it comes to that. Because often the parent that does not want to face it, like you say, oftentimes that may be the one that is dealing with it and has probably not dealt with it for years. So it's all those emotions that are coming up and they see that now in their child and they really want to just mask it and not deal with it.
Yes. That is so true. And so by having conversations like this, I'm hoping that this would resonate with somebody listening, because this is so common, and it's so common in our community because we aren't talking about it. We aren't having conversations about it. And, now, I talk about it almost every day. I took a car accident and took my car, and I had on the cap where my daughter went to school with her school logo, and a young man was like, I went to school there. I was like, you did? Oh my gosh. And the owner of the body shop is dyslexic, right?
Wow.
And so I went back there another time. I think I had my daughter with me, and I might've said, oh, well, if you have homework, pull it out. I don't know how, but I said, oh, well, something dyslexic. And he said, oh no, that's me. That's me. I remember you. He said that. I remember you. You came. And then his daughter walked by and she was smiling, nodding her head. I said, oh, but I thought the whole place might have hurt me. Well, Tracy, if you could leave just one nugget for an adult, let's just talk to an adult who may be struggling or think they may have dyslexia or some other learning disability. If you could just leave one nugget for that adult who is struggling, what would you leave them with?
Try your best to find a community. I don't ever want you to feel like you're isolated, because that isolation can breed a lot of discontent in your own self. And once you find that community, you never know what support and resources is within that community. So I know we're here. You can find a lot of us on Facebook or Instagram or a lot of social media platforms, but try to find a community because you're better with numbers than you are isolated.
Thank you. Thank you. So there you guys have it. Stay tuned. Next week, we'll bring you another special guest to help you win over dyslexia so all can read.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.